You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's roll the Monday afternoon meltdown edition of the program today. We're a couple hours from kickoff. We're going to be breaking it down. Steve Merrill joins us every Monday. We'll talk some baseball World Series odds with Steve Merrill. We'll talk some NASCAR with Steve Merrill. And, of course, we'll talk about the Monday night football game tonight between the Houston Texans and the Denver Broncos. Paul Bovey will join us from the West Coast. VegasInsider.com's Paul Bovey. Paul's getting fired up for the start of the National Basketball Association regular season, which tips off tomorrow. But tonight, we'll focus in on the National Football League. Jason Braddock, man. I love me some Jason Braddock, really. Jason Braddock's like the Ken Bone of the sports world. Everybody loves Jason Braddock. We'll find out if Jason Braddock's seen Jennifer Lord's nude online with the leaked peaks as well. Hey, Jason, what do you think about the Texan game? They have Brock Osweiler returns, huh? Kalamar Miller continue with success. Did you see Jennifer Lawrence's breasts on the leaked pictures? We're going to ask those type of questions to Jason Braddock today. But Braddock's great, man. Braddock is like he breathes football, this guy. Talk show host in Houston. He's my type of guy, too. You can't be, put it this way. If you're a talk show host and the local coach likes you, you're a bad talk show host. You're a crappy talk show host. That's the way I look at it. I know Bill O'Brien doesn't like Jason Braddock, so I like Braddock. So, and we got some great guests, but when do we don't? And we're going to raise it up a notch, actually, in the next couple of days. We've already got great cappers, fantasy experts, roto experts, and all that type of stuff. But we're digging into the book, the black book, the infamous book. We're going to start to roll out some of the old-time guests that we've had over the years in the many incarnations of our shows. But let's get down to business. As another National Football League Sunday is in the books, and it's time to play a game that we call Who Ruined Your Sunday? Let's start off with the Minnesota Vikings. I really don't want to pick on a team that's now covered 19 of their last 22 football games that they played, but I'm going to pick on the Minnesota Vikings. You know, I thought maybe, just maybe, I'm going to have a good Sunday. Had a piece of the New York Giants. Had a piece of the New York Giants in Las Vegas Super Contest. You know, topsy-turvy game, get it done. Nothing like winning that early breakfast at Wimbledon, get the day started with a win. Breakfast of champions, an NFL football game and a bowl on a balcony. Bring it. Hey, we nail it. Boom. Giants are victorious. And like Minnesota Vikings, I had a bad feeling about this Viking game too. There's nothing not to like about the Vikings, right? But they were 1-5 in their last six games coming off a bye. They've been playing great football. And suddenly, Sam Bradford looked like Sam Bradford. And the only, was even worse. I had him on a sweetheart teaser. I could have lost the game by like 10 points. But no, that's not, that's not happening. Not with Sam Bradford. Now, I don't know what was freaking worse and more gruesome yesterday. Watching Glenn and Abraham get their skulls bashed in, or watching the Minnesota Vikings offense get their skulls bashed in. Now, truth be told, we could take some of the walkers from The Walking Dead. They could have played as well as the Viking offense. Hell, we could have taken the damn extras to play the walkers. Because just for the record, for those of you who are at home, they're unaware, they're not really like dead zombies, right? Like, they're actually like, extras. But nevertheless, it was nasty. And it's been a long time since I said the Minnesota Vikings ruined my Sunday, but the Minnesota Vikings ruined my Sunday. I got such a long list, I don't even know where to jump to here. Oh yeah, Buffalo Bills, my Buffalo Bills. Buffalo Bills won four games in a row. I had a bad feeling about this game as well. But why did I take them? Because I'm a stupid idiot, that's why. You know, the game's approaching. I'm like, McCoy, if McCoy was really that hurt, he wouldn't be playing. But no, only the Buffalo Bills are stupid enough to put a half-ass guy in the lineup who gets more hurt after the fact. Like, I don't really understand it. And I don't understand what the hell I was thinking, because I know we were all in the same boat. What are we going to do? Ooh, you got McCoy, you got Gillislee, fantasy. I'm a stupid jerk. I decided to start them both. I was like, you know what? I was going to put them both in a lineup. You know, the Bills run for like 180 yards a game anyway, so I'm going to get production from both of them. Wrong! I got nothing from both of them. And I only took this game because Ryan Tannehill blows against the division. Well, he blows against everything. But Ryan Tannehill, Dolphins, like 1-9 the last 10 division games. Well, not anymore, as the Buffalo Bills once again ruined my Sunday. I guess I should be used to it, though. The Buffalo Bills have been ruining my Sundays since 1977, all right? And speaking of ruining my Sundays, is there anything worse than me having to come here, stand here, and tell you how smart our cameramen are? Now, I might have referred to these two fine gentlemen in the past as a dumb and dumber, or dumb and dumber. Now, it's gone both ways. It's gone both ways. And, you know, last week they were both chirping a lot about how the Colts were going to beat up on the Titans. They said, that's not happening, man. Colts are a bad football team. Titans' time has arrived. Now, I'm going to give more credit to a cameraman, Drew, than I will Mikey. Because Mikey told me on Friday after, well, you know, I really don't like love it or anything. Hey, it was just sort of a topic of conversation. You know, Drew actually stuck to his guns. So we said, listen, I'm the one that's dumb. There it is, Gabriel Morenci. I am the one that's dumb. Dear God, that's what I'd look like with hair. It really is me. You know what? I think I've done more drugs in my life than Jim Carrey, too. Except I haven't given women STD. That's besides the point, right? Oh, nobody's killed themselves because of me yet. My picks have been pretty bad at times. Nevertheless, so listen, the Colts, they're three without three of their top five wide receivers. They don't have a guard. And I tell you what, I guarantee you, when I hear Drew chuckling like a jackal on the other side of the camera right now, you weren't chuckling when the Tennessee Titans came back, were you? You weren't chuckling late in the football game, but it all fell apart. And when it's all said and done, Mike Mularkey ruined another one of my Sundays. This is like a common pattern for this week, actually. People that I dislike, people that are useless, people that used to screw me over. It's pretty much like Mike Mularkey and Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's pretty much like an ex-girlfriend that you went out with like 18 years ago, and she's absolutely crazy, and then suddenly, you know, she just sort of appears in your living room and yells at you for 48 hours again, and then disappears again. It's like a nightmare. As the New York Jets beat the Baltimore Ravens. Listen, at the last second, I decided to pull the trigger on the Baltimore Ravens. I figured, hey, you know, Joe Flacco's playing. Geno Smith is playing, all right? So back to the Walking Dead, all right? We could take a bunch of walkers, and they would beat Geno Smith. Geno Smith cannot win a game in the National Football League. That's not happening. So he wasn't going to win the game. The Ravens were winning. And somehow, that bearded Ivy League overpaid jerk-off Ryan Fitzpatrick's back. And you can't get rid of this guy. And then somehow, when I don't need him, you know, when I need him to suck, he doesn't suck. Oh, Fitzpatrick. And then, of course, if I bet a prop, he's too useless to stay in the damn game. You know, ultimately, too, good job, Fitzpatrick. Your team wins for the first time since week two because you suck. And then you rip them after because nobody believes in you. No. Ryan Fitzpatrick, you can't get paid like a Super Bowl quarterback. You're not a Super Bowl quarterback. I'll be surprised if Fitzpatrick doesn't hold out this week. He wants more money. And it's unbelievable to me that somehow Ryan Fitzpatrick terrorized me again. I didn't even think it was possible. I didn't think he was going to be playing and he wouldn't be playing. Screw you, Fitzpatrick. Screw you, New York Jets. Bowles and the whole damn lot of you. And in fact, screw the entire National Football League. You all ruined my Sunday, and we won't even get to Travis Kelce. How about you try to catch some footballs instead of an STD from some reality TV skank? Enough of catching Chelsea. Oh, every commercial. I see you on TV trying to hook up with some reality TV floozy. Then I do you scoring touchdowns. You suck, and you ruined my Sunday. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions. We are live on the Fantasy Sports Network. Continues. Great show. Busy show lined up. Well, we got Jason Braddock joining us from Texas, Houston, Texas. We'll get the inside perspective on the Texans tonight. Paul Bovey joins us from the West Coast. Paul's got a couple of props. We'll break down tonight's game. And we run the gauntlet with Steve Merrill right now and touch a couple of topics. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, Gabe, doing well.
So, Steve, I got pretty worked up off the top of the program. Came close to dropping a couple F-bombs. Segment's called Who Ruined Your Sunday? And, you know, I bet too many games. So, obviously, along the way, there's going to be some bad beats along the way. But you throw in fantasy as well, and it just compounds it. But the game that really upset me the most yesterday, the Titans-Colts game was frustrating, but the Titans aren't that good. So, it's hard to really hate on them, but the Minnesota Viking game was really frustrating. And then last night, of course, the Seattle-Arizona game was just a complete train wreck, yet it ultimately turned out to be maybe the best, worst game of all time.
Yeah, I'm actually wearing my Cardinal maroon here because after this segment, I'm going to go audition to be the new kicker. Maybe the new long snapper. Actually, maybe the new special teams coach. That's probably what they need. You know, you forget they lost the New England game in week one because of a missed field goal. We know the Buffalo game, some debacles. Shouldn't even have gone to overtime last night. You know, they have a field goal blocked. They don't attempt another one. They had almost a 200-yard edge with no turnovers in regulation. And did not only did they not win, but they didn't cover, obviously, but they didn't even win the game. It's almost theoretically impossible to not win an NFL game at home with almost a 200-yard edge and no turnovers in regulation. They found a way to do it. And I didn't feel good about it at all. You know, I had Arizona minus one. And even when they were within extra point range, I still didn't feel good about it. Then they get a delay of game, which you knew was just the kiss of death there for that field goal attempt.
Yeah, but it really, that's like, even a college kid, that's a lock. Like, hey, we're talking, you know.
I know. And the announcers, Collinsworth was all over. I'll give him credit. You know he doesn't want to attempt this field goal, Al. And,
yeah, but
it looked like a touchdown run right before that, too. He hit the pylon.
Yeah, and his foot hit the pylon, but it was out of bounds because I saw that, too. It wasn't a touchdown. It really
wasn't. But the league reviews those in overtime. So what do the Cardinals do? They decide to rush the next play so there's no chance of a review, which didn't make much sense either. At least hoping maybe they overturn it, you know. I mean, I guess they're trying to catch him off guard, which I understand, but – and they couldn't get it in the end zone from the half-yard line when rushing the play. It just, what a debacle. I didn't think there was a chance the Seattle kicker is missing it after Arizona had missed it, though. So now, I was wrong on that. But then I almost felt like the Hail Mary might score. So I was actually optimistic on that Hail Mary pass at the end, the way the game was going.
Yeah, I thought the Hail Mary might score at the end, too. Just a little icing on the cake, the way it ended. Because you look at the Detroit-Washington game, it was similar. You know, Cousins walked off the field with, you like that again, basically. And, you know, returning home. And he was all, and then boom, Stafford responds. But yeah, I didn't get to Arizona. I should have gotten to that because I had Seattle teased to the over last night. So obviously that was in a lot of trouble.
And you know, Seattle was in trouble.
somehow though, like they ended up getting a cover. They didn't cross their own 37-yard line till like the fourth quarter. Like, and that was because of a blocked punt. Like, they did absolutely nothing. Yeah, if you had money on Arizona last night, that's horrible, man. Like, with that blocked field goal at the end, you know, Arians is saying that, you know, Wagner flew over illegally and all this other stuff, but
he did it twice, actually. He touched him twice. If that's really the rule, I don't know the rule. I mean, Collinsworth said you can't touch him, and then he said maybe I'm wrong on that rule, so that was a real help.
Yeah,
I don't know the rule, but I also don't get paid to be a color commentator. I'd beef up on my NFL rules if I didn't have to handicap five different
sports. You're not allowed to jump. You're not allowed to catapult. I don't know.
I think that's the rule. I think touching them isn't necessarily the rule. I think it's propelling off of them like a gymnast.
Yeah,
it's actually pretty damn entertaining.
It's on Arizona, but it's like they brought it upon themselves. It's like the power of positivity, the power of negativity. It happened. I don't know what it is with Seattle, too. They caught a break last year with the Vikings missing the chip shot. So, I don't know. Maybe there's a divine intervention there.
And by the way, Gabe, I was a long snapper back in the day, and the punt snaps are tough, but a 7-yard snap for a field goal is not hard. There's no reason why that center can't stand up and block, especially when it's happened to him once already in the game. You know it's coming. That's another reason I was blaming the long snapper. I mean, that just shouldn't be happening.
Just for the record, the guy down at the Wynn, Jimmy Avello, the odds maker says it was 275-1 chance of an NFL game ending in a tie.
In a tie? Well, yeah, it happened, 2 years ago with the Panthers, but it hadn't happened much other than that, so that's probably about right.
Now, I think before the Panthers won, we have to go back to that Donovan McNabb game when he didn't know.
Yeah, and well, the thing, though, that last night's game, in hindsight, though, you know, the over-under was around, 43? Obviously, a game like that has a better chance of ending in a tie, although I guess a high-scoring game can as well. But when you're not scoring any touchdowns, there's a better chance of a tie.
They could have played 24 quarters, and they were getting a 43 points last night.
How about this game, though? Last Sunday night, both the side and total were bad beats. And now this week, the side was a bad beat. Because last week, the game goes to overtime and goes over by a point and a half, the Houston-Indianapolis game. And the Colts are covering basically by 17 points in the fourth quarter, and it ends up as a push. So it's back-to-back weeks that people really had a tough Sunday night.
You know what, too? Back-to-back Sunday nights where the games just were utterly awful.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, my God, you see the last 5 minutes of that game? Like, I was like, one of those type of deals. I'll be interested to see the ratings, actually, because The Walking Dead season premiere was on last night, and it was more entertaining than the National Football League, but the CFL is more entertaining than the NFL this year. All right, Steve, so speaking of divine intervention, well, I don't know, man. Like, unless the end of the world arrives, Steve, like, unless the rapture, you know, I never thought about this, Steve. We might be dead in a few days.
Trump and Hillary and the Indians and Cubs.
Yeah, exactly. It's like...
What a November this is going to be.
This can't be happening, Steve. Like, I love my boy, our boy T-Bone, too, in Vegas, diehard Cardinal fan. Everyone's loving the Cubs story. He sends me tweets like, I hate the Cubs with a passion. I hope they never win in my lifetime. And I'm sort of like, screw you, too. I'm a Dodger fan, so I wasn't feeling the love the other night with the Cubs magic. But I tell you what, the betting public is, because the Cubs are -210.
Well, you look at the odds. I mean, Kluber's actually got better overall numbers this year than Arrieta, and that's pitching in the American League with a DH to face. So he's had better numbers overall this year. Cleveland's been very strong offensively at home. They're averaging almost a run per game more at home this year, almost 5.5 runs versus 4.5 on the road. So if you look at just road numbers, which I think is the best way to judge offenses, the Cubs do have better overall offensive numbers this season on the road. But Cleveland's been a strong offensive team at home. We're going to have to keep an eye on the weather with these games. We joked about it last week, but wouldn't it be fitting if every game gets snowed out until spring training and neither team wins a World Series? But right now, it looks like it'll be fairly clear this week. But, you know, the ball, cold weather can play havoc on these games, and they will be nighttime games, of course, being the World Series.
You mentioned Hillary Clinton, too. She's from Illinois, too. Great.
Yeah, she said so. I saw something on the news today about she had a tweet about Saturday about how great it was. Big Cubs fan, Hillary.
Yeah, yeah, because she lives and breathes every damn inning, Steve, right?
Exactly. Name one player, Hillary.
Well, at least,
that'd be a great gotcha question.
Hey, I can't believe I'm going to give Hillary Clinton credit, but let's give her credit. At least she's not Carly Fiorina. Although I'm from Illinois, I'm pulling for, because Ohio's a key state, I'm pulling for the Indians. Remember, Carly did that last year. She went to Stanford. She's pandering to people in Iowa. She goes, even though I'm a Stanford alum, I'm pulling for Iowa in the Rose Bowl.
And we liked the game.
People in Iowa were like, man, this girl's got no loyalty. Like, you don't win when you do stuff like that, Steve.
But that's why people hate politicians, because they're just so phony on this stuff. And about an hour ago, I had the news on. I thought of you because Elizabeth Warren was introducing Hillary and the other, like, female running for something in New Hampshire.
Oh, I saw it.
Oh, no, she got up there. She goes, it's nice to finally be back where you can say to the audience, go Pats. I mean, it was so fake and phony. It's like, go Pats. Nobody would even say that. It'd be like, go Patriots, you know, and there again, just a total fake politician. Makes me cringe.
Figures they'd be Patriot fans. They're all cheaters, right? Like, they're all, I swear, I didn't think there was possible for a woman's voice to upset me more than Hillary Clinton. Elizabeth Warren. Just shut up. Like, I can't, let's move on, actually, Steve, because, she's the worst.
She's the love child of Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. I mean, that's basically what she is.
And the worst part is she doesn't even like Hillary Clinton. They're all sellouts. Like, she's up there, she's all great. Yeah.
I thought of you. I knew you liked it.
It's not good, Steve. I'm telling you. It's not good. I've already started to tune it out because I don't like it. It's almost like a blowout of a football game. I don't need to see the end, Steve. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I didn't mean to turn it on. I just happened to have the news channel when the TV came on. Trust me. I haven't watched news for months now. It's painful. I can't wait until this election is over. Maybe our country will be less depressed for once. It's just terrible.
I saw a woman in a family in West Virginia that said if Hillary wins, they're moving underground so they don't have to live in a world.
Well, at least they're staying in the country, though. Most people say they're moved to Europe, and they never do it. I'd love if half these people moved to Europe and say it.
They all say they're moving to Canada. Yeah, good luck getting in, all right?
Yeah, that's right.
They think it's some sort of like, all right.
Canada's an open door.
Yeah. All right, sorry, we're all over the place. But, so yeah, I haven't seen a line for game one. The series minus 210. I haven't seen a line for game one, Steve. Seen a bunch of lines for game ones in the NBA tomorrow.
Yeah.
But no line, I guess because it's not confirmed. They're not announcing the pitcher
yet. I'm saying the Cubs is undecided is the reason.
It's Corey Kluber for the Indians. Yeah, Kluber's going for the Tribe.
Arrieta just got 6 days of rest, just like Kluber, 5 days of rest. I don't understand why it won't be Arrieta.
I heard it was Lester, but I don't know. Like,
yeah, maybe that's why it's off the board thing, because I was thinking it might be Arrieta. So yeah. I guess that's the reason.
I hear they're leaning Lester, but either way, it's set up. They have Lester and Arrieta both going twice.
Right.
So that's their deal. They're both going twice, so either way. And word out of Cleveland is Danny Salazar is back. But to what extent? You know, can you just throw this guy out there like that?
Yeah, maybe bullpen use. You know, that's what you think is probably a safer option with a situation like that.
Well, Steve, we're not going to the games. Can you take me to the game? You see the ticket prices?
No, I have. I can only imagine.
All right. So the cheapest ticket for tomorrow night is $700.
So, well, I'm surprised. I would have made the over under 1,000.
Well, that's Cleveland. You can get in, but it's standing.
Yeah, I was going to say Chicago will be more than that.
You're in the outfield on that deck. You're not in the stadium.
Right, right.
All right? Okay. Yeah, the average ticket price in Chicago, $7,800.
Wow.
$7,800. The cheapest ticket for game three of the World Series is $4,000 right now. So it's $4,000 just to get into the stadium.
Well, it's been, what, how long since they've even been in a World Series game? 70-some years? Well, since like the
71
40s,
71 years.
Right? Yeah, and they haven't won, of course, in over 100 years. So, yeah, I mean, if you've saved your money for 71 years, you could easily afford that ticket. If you've compounded it, I mean, what would that have cost probably 71 years ago? Maybe a dollar or two? Just crazy.
Yeah, they should have let the goat in. Maybe they wouldn't have waited. Like that, but they let the goat in, Billy the Goat. Buddy showed up with a goat. That's how the curse started. Buddy showed up with a goat at the World Series in 1945, and they didn't let his goat in. And he put a curse on them. He said, you know what? Me and my goat curse you. He was the bar owner, Billy the Goat. And there it is. So, Steve, who wins the World Series?
Well, I guess the Cubs are the better team, but in a seven-game series, you know, you see in the regular season, teams get hot, teams get cold. Put it this way, I think from a money line value play, I think the Indians have the value. I wouldn't be laying 1-2 minus 200 with the Cubs. As I said earlier, I think a lot of the pitching matchups are equal. Home field advantage, obviously, in baseball doesn't mean much, but they do get to bat last in the ninth. That's a big edge in the postseason when you're kind of playing run for run, and the atmospheres will be pretty strong. So, I mean, Cleveland has home field. They have equal pitching. And as I mentioned earlier, their offense on the road's been a little weaker, but their numbers at home have been very strong this season. So I think this is a toss-up. I don't think the Indians should be a 2-1 dog.
Chris Bryant's the favorite for MVP at 6-1. Andrew Miller's the top choice for the Tribe at plus 650. You know, you and I often talk about MVPs. Baseball is so much trickier, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's a crapshoot. Yeah.
We talk about, Super Bowl MVP. All right, you know, there's always maybe the linebacker and then these guys. You know, NBA. Well, it's going to be two or three guys.
Right.
This, man, I don't know. Like, it's so wide open, Steve, right? Like, who knows, man? Like, if, you know, for all we know, Josh, Tomlin goes out there and pitches a couple of gems and he wins, right? You never know this with this crap.
Right. And you go to an NFL Super Bowl, you got a 7-point favorite. They have a 75% chance of winning the game. So you kind of know who's going to probably win. The NBA finals of every sport is hardly any upsets. It's always the one or two seeds, the best teams in the league every year. And you know the guy that's going to have 40% of the possessions for a team. You know, in baseball, even the best hitters have a 70% chance of not hitting the ball every time they're at the plate. You could maybe make a case for some pitchers. You know, since we know the rotation out with Lester, Arrieta, you know, maybe if you think you like one team over the other, then maybe take a shot with a pitcher. But even that is tough because they basically have to pitch great in both games to have any shot.
That's a good point. If you want to take a shot, you can say, okay, Arrieta. Well, Arrieta's going to have to pitch great twice.
Right.
John Lester, he did pitch good twice, and he was the co-MVP of the championship series. You're right. But I guess if you're the Indians, unless somebody just goes off, but they don't really do that. Lindor, is their guy, but they don't really have that potent, offense. I guess you can make a case for Andrew Miller. Because if the Indians are going to win the World Series, it's because he's going to be lights out, right? I mean, the guy's pitched 20 innings of postseason baseball in his career, and he hasn't given up a run. He's a key cog. He was the MVP for the Tribe. But in a seven-game series, the pitchers could get it, too. It's too hard to pick this.
It almost, if it's going to be an offensive guy, you got to look for some guy that has pop, because even if you get 5 or 10 hits, you know, if you're nickel and diamond hits, it doesn't necessarily get the award. You got to have a big home run that maybe wins a game or a couple. A guy like Rizzo, I think, is due. He hasn't done much, and almost feel like he's going to heat up in this series, so he might be worth a look for the Cubs.
All right, Steve. So tonight's a Monday nighter. I don't know, man. A lot of these primetime games have been terrible, and then they end poorly. This, I don't know.
Another 6-6 tie tonight, maybe.
Yeah, this is a weird game, actually, in which they're very, very similar teams, Steve. Extremely similar teams. They're both great. In fact, they're both ranked number one and number two, respectively, against the pass, but they both give up big chunks on the ground. They both don't really score all that much. Their defenses are pretty good. Hell, Brock Osweiler played with these guys. You're very, very familiar. Kubiak used to coach the Texans. They're very familiar with each other.
Yeah, I think those are some interesting points. I mean, you know, Osweiler obviously is going to know the Broncos. You know, how much information he can provide overall for the game plan is another question. But I do think that's a bit of a handicapping factor. I like it more when coaches know the other team. So then you've got the Kubiak angle. Not sure a lot of the Texans are there anymore that he coached. You know, they've had a lot of turnover.
How much
recently
did it help Bradford yesterday knowing the Eagles terminology?
True. Well, I'll tell you what, that was a textbook example of a good team not needing the bye week, just like the Eagles started 3-0 and got the bye, and then the Vikings 5-0 and got the bye. So,
you're right.
You know, some other stuff going on there as well. But, yeah, I mean, these are two below average offenses, two good defenses. It's the lowest total of the week. It opened 41.5, went down to 40.5, crossed that key number of 41. And now, as we're doing the show live, it's down to 40. Just within the last couple minutes, it's dropped further. Can't disagree with the under here. I mean, this game reminds me a lot of last night's matchup, to be honest. Let's hope it turns out a little better. But you also got some tough kicking conditions, except for the fact that you got the altitude where the ball can go 60 yards without a problem. But Mile High can be a little tricky sometimes with the kicking otherwise.
Yeah, one thing we should note, I agree with you, too. Points are going to be at a premium. The Broncos just won 4-1 against the spread last six times at home when laying 7 or more points. Their offense really isn't designed for this. I think Simeon could be a little bit more effective now. All right, see, we've got to get out of here. But NASCAR, the Elite Eight, is now set. Logano didn't need to win at Talladega, but he did anyways. Truex Jr., our boy. He's gone.
And Keselowski, your other boy.
I know. Back to Denver and back to Kentucky for Truex and Keselowski. So the eight are set. We got Logano. We got Johnson. We got Harvick. We got Kenseth. We got Edwards. We got Denny Hamlin. And both Bush, the Bush boys. The Bush boys squeeze in the back door. So did Denny Hamlin. In fact, Austin Dillon. You know, Hamlin and Dillon were tied, but Hamlin won the tiebreaker.
And Hamlin finished top three, I think third, right? So if he finishes fourth, he doesn't. And he finished third by 0.06 of a second to win the tiebreaker. Then on top of that, we've got Martinsville and Phoenix as two of the next three races. Kyle Busch, fourth and first at those tracks this year. Guess who other guy was top 10 in both? Austin Dillon. So what a shame that he missed the cutoff by 0.06, because he actually might have made the final four otherwise and been a real sleeper. Carl Edwards also very good at those two tracks this year. So I think Kyle Busch and Carl Edwards are worth a look on future plays just because they've run well here, and they both do well on tracks like Miami, which is another type of, you know, flat intermediate track. So if you're looking for some future plays, Kyle Busch, Carl Edwards, both from the Gibbs team, they got all four drivers in the final eight.
Yeah, we got to get out of here. But I tell you what, no Cinderella stories in this final eight, eh, Steve? Nah. Talk about heavyweights, eh? Logano,
and Truex was the fifth Gibbs driver, and he almost made it, you know, so just crazy.
Yeah. All right, we got to get out of here. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Paul Bovey, VegasInsider.com, joins me next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, let's bring in Paul Bovey right now. Cut the small talk and break down tonight's Monday night football game. Paul Bovey, VegasInsider.com. Paul, always a pleasure. How you doing?
It's raining in California, Gabe, which means you got to stay off the road. These people from California, very problematic when getting behind the wheel when there's some precipitation.
And I know, and it doesn't take much, just some drizzling as well. It was kind of strange, actually. I was watching the Walking Dead finale last night, or season premiere, and then the post show, and they were doing it at a cemetery, which I don't know. I find pretty disrespectful to shoot a show at a cemetery, but whatever, nevertheless. But, I saw it was pouring rain in L.A. last night. Like, not just drizzling, but it started to come down pretty hard last night.
Gabe, it's really coming down now. And the only thing funnier than watching somebody try to drive in the rain in Southern California is watching him parallel park, because it's a two-man show. Well, one guy's got to get out and tell you when to cut the wheel. It's pretty comical.
All right. So last week you broke your computer. Did you get it? You get the screen fixed or just get a new computer?
No, I've gone through an adjustment period, and I got this line down on the right-hand side, and it's a hassle because you got to move the cursor over and move the page over because, you know, you may hit the wrong thing. But I'm dealing, Gabe.
Yeah, I've been there, and I've hung on to the end as well. All right, what do you make of tonight's game? I'm looking at these two teams, and statistically, they're almost identical, actually. You know, they both look, the Denver Broncos are the number one team in the league against the pass. They're only giving up like 189 yards a game in the air. The Houston Texans only give up like 186 or 196, whatever the hell it is. You know, 4 or 5 yard difference between the two of them. But they both give up yards on the ground. Opponents are rushing for 112 yards a game against the Denver Broncos. Meanwhile, teams are running for 111 yards a game on the Houston Texans. The Texans are 29th at passing the football. And, here they are right now with a 4-2 record. What do you make of these teams?
It's going to be an interesting game. The intrigue to me is Brock Osweiler, just because of the comments he made and not going to the White House and going to Manning's party. And you know there's some animosity there. And he signs this huge contract, and there's animosity because of that as well. Look, the guy's getting $37 million guaranteed his first 2 years, and he hasn't proven much. But you make some good points about the running game. I've always believed you can run right down the gut, right in the gut, against the Denver Broncos. But they're going to put some pressure on the quarterback. Look, they lead the league in sacks. Von Miller, 7.5, and then you got a couple other guys who have really stepped up. It's going to be a slugfest.
You know, the Texans got Lamar Miller going last week. And, of course, he was one of the big offseason acquisitions as well. The Texans want to run the football, and you can run on the Broncos, as you stated. Animosity, they're going to be going after Osweiler. And I tell you what, man, if I'm Bill O'Brien, I make sure that when I have Osweiler dropping back to pass, that I have him getting rid of the ball quickly, because they're going to be coming fast and furious at this guy.
I agree, Gabe, and I think C.J. Fedorowicz will probably spend a lot of time in the backfield, giving him some extra protection. So I don't think C.J. is going to do much. He didn't do much for the first four games. He did something last week because, as you know, Will Fuller on the sideline. So I think that C.J. is an underplay, and I think Lamar Miller actually catching a few balls out of the backfield, that's an overplay.
You know, you look at the Broncos, the defense is doing their thing, but they can only do so much. The offense hit a wall, first with Paxton Lynch. Simeon comes back against San Diego and struggles. Props to you. You actually liked the Chargers in that game. How much do you think the extended layoff here? The Broncos haven't played since Thursday. It's a long time now, man. What are we into, like 11 days now? It gives time for Simeon to get healthier.
Hey, I like the layoff. I think it benefits these teams. You know, those quick turnarounds, they hurt sometimes. You got these bumps and bruises, they got to heal. And I think coming off a layoff and coming off a loss, I think it really benefits the team. And I think it's going to benefit the Broncos. And they are home. They're in their environment. And I think they're going to get the better of it tonight.
You know, the thing with Houston is that the number feels a little bit too high. It's almost obvious. I got buddies that live in Denver. They're sending me a text. Oh, they're going to kill him tonight. They're going to murder Osweiler. They want to hurt him. They're going to get to him. Everyone's just buying into this storyline. Yet I look at the Broncos and I look at the offense, and they don't really run away from anybody. And in fact, I've been bringing up the number. They're 1-4-1 the last six home games. We're laying 7 or more points as a favorite. But my concern is with Houston, and this has been a trend with the Houston Texans over the years, Paul, they quit. They give up on games. You know, last week was kind of an anomaly, and they came back. So I don't know. Maybe that provides that spark for them. but they were flat as hell that game against the Patriots on national television. It was Jacoby Brissett. They got shut out. They basically gave up like midway through the third quarter. Like, they didn't even have enough pride to not want to get shut out. You know what I mean? And we've seen this. In Minnesota, they pitched the tent and said, you know what, we're out. We're done. So this team does have a tendency of quitting when things don't go their way. And also, this is Brock Osweiler's war with Denver. It's not DeAndre Hopkins' battle. It's not Lamar Miller's battle. I don't know how much they love Osweiler, that they're going to battle. Or he's our guy right now. But there is a lot of animosity, and it seems like, you know, the Broncos are definitely more fired up for this, you got to believe. But the number's too high, Paul. I want to take a contrarian play stance here and say the Texans hang around in this game.
Couple points, Gabe. Number one, you could say they're, quote, flat, or you could say maybe they're overmatched. And I believe they were overmatched against the Vikings, and they were also overmatched against the Patriots. Will his teammates step up for him, Brock Osweiler? How much do they love this guy? He's getting all this money, and a lot of these guys, they're never going to see that money in their life.
And he was average, too. And he was average, Paul. And he's been average. So, you know, a lot of these guys are thinking, damn, and now I know why Denver doesn't care about this guy. Because you're right, players are honest. They talk, like, brutally, too. They know. But I think thank God for him, man, that he came back last week. Because that was his signature win. Hey, you guys pay me the money, but I just came back 2 touchdowns down against the Colts, right?
Exactly. And I'm going to make a point about the number. The number at 7.5 is very deceptive. It doesn't seem like much, but when you stop and think about it, 8 is a dead number, 9 is usually a dead number, so you got to get to 10, and the total is hovering around 40. That's a huge number considering it is expected to be such a low-scoring game. So it's very hard to lay the points here. Maybe you consider buying it down to 7, but the books aren't stupid. You're going to pay for that privilege.
You know what's strange? They both played 6 games. They're both 3-3 with the totals. Yet the Houston Texans started out the season 0-3. Three straight 0-3 over-unders. So it was 3 straight unders for the Texans. Their last 3 games have been over the number. Meanwhile, the Broncos are the opposite. The Broncos were 3 straight openers, 3 straight overs, and now they've had 3 straight unders in a row. Real strange dichotomy here.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And it's tough to go under here. It's always tough to go under these low,
so low
totals. But then again, look at last night. You ended up with 6 points, 12 points in overtime. So I would lean to the under here if I were playing the game and hope that there's no implosions turnover-wise, because that's what would catapult you over the number. It's not going to be these offenses. No way. I mean, Osweiler, his last 120 pass attempts, 620 or 30 yards. It's like 5 yards an attempt. He does not throw the ball downfield, and neither does Simeon. So it figures to be 3 in a cloud of dust.
Paul Bovey, VegasInsider.com. We'll start adding some NBA talk to the rotation with Paul in the coming weeks. Always a pleasure, Paul.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, Jason Braddock joins us next from Houston, Texas. All right, game time. The Sins on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Let's send it to Houston, Texas. Jason Braddock, host of The Source on Sports Talk 790, Houston, Texas, steps up and in. Jason, always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
Doing well. How about yourself?
All right, Jason. So, you know, we've broken this game down with a couple of handicappers from a betting standpoint, and now we'll sort of all, like, you know, tie up all the loose ends with you. And something we were just talking about with Paul Bovey a couple of moments ago is, you know, how liked is Brock Osweiler? You know, how liked is he in the room? I'm not saying he's disliked, but this is his battle, right? This is like, it's his. He's the one that ran his mouth. He's the one with the bad blood with the Denver Broncos. Yet the rest of the Houston Texans are getting caught up in it because whatever happens to Brock is happening to them as well. Are the Houston Texans players, Are they going to be able to match the intensity besides Brock? Is everyone else, like, do they understand what they're going in here? The Denver are, like, ready to kill this guy tonight?
I don't think the Texans are going to be able to play up to the intensity of the Broncos. I think Brock is emotionally invested, and, you know, guys in the locker room will say that, you know, we got his back, yada, yada, yada. But unless you're personally affiliated with it, I don't think you play with that extra emotion. I think Brock will play with extra emotion. I think the entire Broncos team will play with extra emotion. And I think we see a difference in the intensity there.
Yeah, you know, Von Miller's already playing with emotion, but, you know, he's going to want to get there. There's been a lot of tweets and a lot of talk on social media this week, most of it coming from the Denver Broncos and their defenders, basically not even hiding it. They're going after Brock Osweiler. Like, they really feel disrespected by him.
Yeah, and I think they should. You know, down here in Houston, they try to downplay it and all and say it wasn't this and it wasn't that. You can tell Brock, you know, had some personal hurt feelings or whatever transpired there with the Denver Broncos. And a lot of those Denver Bronco players, they probably took it poorly, and they should have. You know, I mean, here's a guy that was in your building for 4 years. You have in place to hopefully be able to turn the franchise over to him when Peyton Manning leaves, and he decides to leave because of being benched for a Hall of Famer in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's a good way of that's a very, very good way of actually putting it. You know, it's one thing, Jason, if a guy leaves and says, you know what, I got to go here, man, because, you know, I like the system here and I want to live there. Or, hey, the money's just too good. I'm getting offered this much money. Thanks for everything you've done with the organization. But Brock didn't play it like that. Like, he didn't even return, like, their calls, basically, right? Like, he didn't talk to them. He didn't return teammates' calls. Because that's the thing. You can leave a team, but, you know, you respond back to your boys on the team, say, yo, man, it ain't about you. I don't like the GM. I got to get out of here. I don't like this. I got a great offer. Then it's okay. It almost like Brock is the one that made it personal and just stopped talking to everybody on the Broncos. And like you said, man, like, it's got to rub some guys the wrong way personally as well, that I know this guy for 4 years, man. He was on the team for 4 years, and suddenly he turns his back on us like this. Personally, not just professionally.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the key. The key there is 4 years. I mean, think about anybody in your life that you know for 4 years, and they say all the right things to you, treat you, and you think you're friends. And as a friend, you send a text, and then they just decide to quit talking to you, quit texting you. It's got more to do with personal than it does professional, but you're not going to take that out on them personally. You're going to take it out on them professionally and on Monday Night Football in your stadium with fans all behind you. And at that altitude, it's the perfect atmosphere for them to do that.
How much did Brock's stock go up with the comeback win last week? Like, before and after, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, Jason, what was Brock's popularity? Like, you take calls from people. I guess people must have been somewhat underwhelmed. And then after, was it like, well, this is what we're paying him for, okay. Was there a sigh of relief? How was he viewed before and after the comeback last week?
For 3.5 quarters, it seemed like the city was ready to cast him out and start the Tom Savage era. That's what it felt like. And then when he came and put together the drive there at the end, and it wasn't just the drive and the comeback, because let's be honest, the Colts wasn't sending pressure. They were sitting back. And but Brock, you know, to give him some credit, I would state it like this. After the comeback, there was a glimmer of hope, like, all right, maybe this guy can develop into something. I don't think he's ever going to be a top 10, maybe not even a top 15 guy, but maybe he can develop into something that can manage the game and make the throws when you need him to, because that post pass to C.J. Fedoris and the go route to Jalen Strong, those are franchise type of throws in key moments. So it gave him a glimmer of hope. But a lot of the fans still have seen too much negative to really buy into that comeback against one of the worst defenses in the NFL.
Yeah, and I've seen prevent defenses, but that was a prevent. I could have completed those passes. And they did the same thing yesterday. Tennessee were down, And Marcus Mariota started playing pitch and catch. Like the Colts right. guys were lining up like 15 yards off the line of scrimmage. And I was thinking the same thing. So people like aren't like, oh, that was a Joe Montana like comeback. They're like, all right, the Colts led us back in this. One thing that I'll take a positive from his performance last week, like a lot of tall quarterbacks, Jason, he's very clumsy in the pocket. And his pocket awareness is awful. And he never really seems to step into trouble as opposed to find just a little footwork and dance around to get out of trouble. But I'll give him this. Last week was the first time the Colts were bringing the heat a couple of times, and he actually showed some nimbleness in the pocket that I've never seen before that just sort of comes with confidence. Did you catch that as well?
Yeah, with Brock, he's struggled at times to, instead of bail his offensive linemen out, he's put them in tougher situations. Yeah. Leaving the pocket too early and rushing outside.
Same with Cutler, Jason? We see the same thing with Cutler.
Absolutely.
Like, not that Hoyer's great, but the sacks are way down with a different quarterback.
Absolutely. If you trust your pocket, and that's what Brock's been fighting himself with over the last couple weeks. And like you said, you're starting to see some growth there. Again, the only way I can state it is it's a glimmer of hope. Where there was no hope, there wasn't anything on film that let you see growth or anything. At least there's this little glimmer, this sparkle in the distance, like, all right, well, maybe he is starting to pick up the stuff. So he's starting to fight through his natural tendencies and try to become more of a pocket passer and trust the pocket better, because at times, like you said, not only has he left the pocket too soon and gotten his tackles in trouble, he also takes, because he's 6'7", he takes one of the deeper drops on those play action passes where he's getting 10 yards out and your tackles are taught to protect a certain point to protect the loop. And if your quarterback's dropping too far back, then at that point, it doesn't matter how technically sound your tackles are. The guys just have the right angle just to take a straight shot, point A to point B to the quarterback.
That's a good point, too. When he would get sacked, suddenly it's second and 17 as opposed to a second and 13 or something. Like most quarterbacks, all right, we got to get out of here. They got like 10 seconds. Who wins tonight or final score? What's your prediction?
I'm going to go Denver Broncos, let's say 23-13. Marcus Peters leads the NFL in interceptions with 5. Aqib Talib is tied in second with 3. Brock Osweiler threw 2 to Marcus Peters. Wouldn't be surprised to see 2 to Talib to put him. It's the Brock Osweiler factor when you're talking about NFL lead and interceptions. If Osweiler played him, then it's an automatic +2.
Jason Braddock, always a pleasure. Thanks, Jason.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
We're going to come back with our plays of the day coming up next. All right, we got to be fast on the way out here. I seem to be the only one that's playing a contrarian pick, but I'm going to take the Houston Texans +7.5. Let's tease this game to the over. Both these teams are great against the pass, but they're pretty soft against the run. Lamar Miller over 76.5. Trevor Siemian over 20.5 completion. C.J. Anderson over 54.5 rushing yards, over 5.5 sacks. Long field goal over 44.5, and the Blackhawks win.